Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Racing Lanes with your hosts, Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Racing Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. We'll be joined very shortly by my co-host and special guest, Chuck Snow will be is the co-host, and our special guest for this evening, Mr. Henry Seaton of Seaton and Huss Law Firm. We have a very informative show to bring to you guys tonight. We're going to be kind of discussing the attack on the owner-operator model, and of course, we always welcome your questions. So if you got any type of questions or anything for tonight's show, please press number one. That puts you in the call screener's queue. We don't have a call screener per se, but we need you to be listening out for the first three digits, your area code on your phone number. When we come to you, you'll hear a little click on the line, and we'll get you up and on board for you to ask your question and get involved with us. But without any further delay, let's get over and see how we were looking for this week's DAT trend. I apologize. We need to be going to the USDA fruit and vegetable truck rate report for this week, and then we're going to jump into the trend lines report from DAT. So this week on the USDA fruit and vegetable report, we got quite a good bit of movement for this week. We have good news to report. There is an actual market showing a real live shortage of trucks in the area. And it's kind of surprising because last week this was in the opposite category, but that area is Eastern North Carolina is reporting an outright shortage of trucks. We have several areas that are reporting slight shortages of trucks, so that means that there may be some opportunities to be had there as well. Those areas are Mexico Crossing through Nogales, Arizona, Idaho, Merrill County, Oregon, Upper Valley, Twin Falls, Burley District, Idaho, and Columbia Basin, Washington. All of those areas are reporting slight shortages. All the rest of the markets are reporting adequate supplies of trucks in the marketplace right now. So there you have this week's USDA report. Switching gears and jumping over really quickly to this week's DAT trend lines report for the week of November the 11th through the 17th. Van and reefer load-to-truck ratios got a big boost last week, rising more than 20%. Vans are moving retail products in the preparation for Black Friday, and reefers are hauling fresh food and produce ahead of Thanksgiving. Rates, however, have remained fairly stable. Van and reefer rates saw a slight increase, while flatbeds saw a little bit of a decline over the week last week. Moving right along, looking at how the rates were performing over the previous week. Let me hold on. We have a slight bump in the price of diesel fuel by 0.3 percentage points. It is up to a national average of $3.07 per gallon right now. And now let's take a look and see how those spot market rates were performing across the different segments. For dry vans, we are going to start out in the northeastern portion of the United States, showing an average spot market rate on drop for dry vans at 161. Coming out of the southeastern and mid-Atlantic states, we have an outbound spot market rate at 175. Moving up to the Midwest, leading the nation across the dry van segment. Coming out of the Midwest, average spot market rate for dry vans at 205. Dropping down to the South Central, we show average outbound spot market rates at 167 for dry vans. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we show outbound spot market dry van rates at 178. Shifting gears, jumping over to the flatbed report for this week, showing outbound spot market rates coming out of the Northeast at $2.05 per mile. Moving down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, outbound spot market rates for flatbeds at $2.21. moving up into the Midwest, seems to always be leading the spot market rates. Once again, for flatbeds, outbound spot market at 229 for flatbeds. Dropping down to the South Central, we show outbound rates at 208. And coming out of the West Coast, we show outbound spot market rates at 191. And moving over to the temperature control reefer segment of this report, we have an outbound spot market rate coming out of the Northeast at 183. Moving to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states, we show outbound spot market rates at 193. Moving up into the Midwest, once again, leading the nation across all three segment types, outbound spot market rates for reefers are showing at 250. Moving down into the South Central portion of the United States, we have an outbound spot market rate at 199. And also wrapping up the report coming out of the West Coast, showing an outbound spot market rate for reefers at $2.14 per mile. Really quickly, I want to double check. We don't have anything to report as far as the bad broker report, which is good news. We welcome that. And with that being said, let me bring on my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well, Rico. How are you, buddy?
We are doing well as well. We are excited, raring to go. Hopefully we have a lively discussion this week. I'm hoping that maybe we get a little more caller participation, but I'm very looking forward to having Hank Seaton on and discussing, you know, finding out what he has to say about this subject at hand.
Just so am I, because it sounds like it's a mess. I was just reading in Overdrive now, and I guess some of the big carriers, Prime being one of them, is given an ultimatum to their owner-operators based in California, either get out of your truck and perhaps sell it to us and become a company driver, or move out of the state of California.
Wow.
Which isn't a good thing. Yeah.
I'm wondering how this is going to affect Landstar and some of the other guys.
Well, Landstar's in the same boat. And, of course, Landstar doesn't – they're not in the business of owning assets other than some trailers. So
right.
It didn't quite say how Landstar's handling it other than the fact that they've had some meetings with their guys and told them to move out of the state. There's nothing else they can do. Now, I believe, and Hank will shed some light on this, I think if they haul loads, I think you're okay if you're coming out of, if you bring a load in from Nevada to or New York to California, I think you're okay. But I don't think that you can haul a load intrastate. But Hank will fill us in on that, exactly what the ramifications of this new law is.
Well, while we're talking about them, let's just go ahead and bring them up and on board. Hank,
what are we waiting for? Right?
Joins the Breaks and Lanes podcast. Hank, how are you this evening?
I'm doing fine. We've got a hot topic for sure tonight, though, guys.
We certainly do. Hank,
well, Hank,
can you shed some
turn
light
the floor over? Uh-oh, go ahead, Chuck.
Okay.
I'm really anxious.
Chuck, go ahead, buddy.
Hank, what does the law say? What happens if an owner-operator is hauling a load and he's working for Prime or whoever, Landstar, and the load originates in New York or Illinois and it's going to California? Is he out of compliance just because he's an owner-operator, or does he have to actually move out of the state irregardless?
Well, you've jumped over about five questions to get there. let's back up a little bit and talk about the owner-operator model and get some givens down. There is a great political divide in this country, and it you might say that it depends on what color politician you are, but ultimately it is the independent contractor model an opportunity for small business growth, or is an owner-operator what they call a slave. Is it sweatshop on wheels, and are people forcing the bad owner-operator deals because they can't get other jobs? So if you follow that political divide, the independent contractor model that we have has been around for at least 60 years, and it has always been subject to a carve-out from classification as an employee at both federal and state levels. And that's because of something called the Truth in Leasing Regulations. Is anybody on the phone who's an owner-operator or who has owner-operators, you know that a complying lease is like a contractor's bills of rights. It specifies when he's going to be paid, what has to be in the contract, so that a carrier really should not be able to take advantage of an owner-operator. And that system has worked. And worked very well until the early 2000s. Everybody said, well, there's this federal system, it applies across state lines, and there was a 20-part test that the feds put out with a safe harbor, which said that you could pay an owner-operator as an independent businessman, and then he got all of the benefits of being a small business, write off taxes. He could do work with his own per diem. He could get OCAC insurance without being one way or another having to pay huge workman's comp rates. About the year 2000, 2003, that started changing. And during the Obama administration, it changed far more rapidly. There begun a whole bunch of class actions against major motor carriers. And they're really based on three things. First of all, that the carrier violated the Truth in Leasing Regulations. Number two, that under certain federal statutes, the driver had been deprived of minimum wage. And finally, that it was a state-by-state issue with respect to state employment laws. Now, follow this along. There's a thing called federal preemption. That comes up all the time, and it says that if the federal government makes a law that's supposed to apply with uniformity in all states, then it trumps anything a state wants to do. But somewhere along the line, the court started to recognize that that federal preemption doesn't trump a state's right to set up its own employment laws. Speed ahead, and you see that a bunch of states have started following their own leading on classification of owner-operators as independent businessmen. The argument goes something like this. The government knows better than an owner-operator does that he should have benefits. He should be paid by the hour. That's part of his middle class bill of rights, and that the independent contractor status is not an opportunity. So you get states, and it's interesting that you mentioned what happens if he originates in New York or New Jersey and goes to California. Well, unfortunately, New York and New Jersey aren't far behind California. Most of the employment law has traditionally applied where the driver is domiciled. So we talk about what's called AB5, which is the California statute everybody's worried about. It certainly will apply to any driver who is domiciled in California or who works out of a California terminal. Reason being, he's supposed to be a homeboy who's employed in California and subject to their regulations. That doesn't mean that California won't try to extend its jurisdiction to cover carriers that have out-of-state drivers. But in terms of the real conflict that we're dealing with now, we're dealing with a bill that passed in California called AB5. And it comes up with a test that's been around for a long time in terms of telling whether or not you're misclassifying a guy as an independent contractor. It's called the ABC test. and it throws out the control test, it throws out the federal test, and says that the carrier will be responsible for all of the wage and hour requirements, for all of the unemployment insurance premiums, for the workman's comp, and whatever else California wants to impose, if that independent contractor is in the same trade or business as the carrier who hires him. You flunked that. He's a truck driver in your trucking company. As far as they're concerned, under the A prong, there's no way for an independent contractor to work for a trucking company. The B prong is whether or not he's in a separate trade or business. And by that they mean that he has the right to haul for other carriers. And you probably, if it were an OR test, could say that cut it out, but you got to hit all three of them. And the third one is similar in terms of your domicile. So basically the smart money says that with the ABC test, come January 1, carriers have to make a decision. And there's already some bad case law out there called Dynamex. It's already subjecting existing carriers to being sued. But this ABC test, unless the court restrains it, is what is leading the kind of situation that you're talking about with Prime. There are about five ways that people have are advising carriers and owner-operators to go. And I can run quickly through those. You hit a couple of them. Number one, carriers are saying, look, the independent contractor model doesn't work in California anymore. Industry's moving out. We're moving out. You want to be an owner-operator, you can't be a subterfuge, but the weather is fine in Arizona and Nevada. And I think you may see some people who really do that. You're going to see some motor carriers, because of the increased cost that will have to be passed on in California, basically do break bulk terminals at places like Sparks and Phoenix and run right. their line haul folks to the edge of California. And as far as I'm concerned, they ought to just charge a California surcharge like you got a surcharge for Manhattan, and then right. hire somebody to do your PU and PD in California who can put up with the taxes. That's a strategy. There are other strategies that if people on the phone are working for independent contractors, you may hear of. One is to tell the owner-operator, look, incorporate. Sign a deal with us that's a business-to-business deal. And then if you're a proprietor and you can use that to your benefit in terms of making your own deal on OCAC or workman's comp or withholding, you can preserve your model. That's something that people are thinking about and still continue to hire them as independent contractors.
I just want to interject here. Can they do that if the owner-operator, if he incorporates and lives in California, can they do that right now or not?
Well, that is actually the model in a way that people like FedEx are doing.
Okay.
FedEx typically hires
they're making all their guys.
A fleet operator. And, you know, they hire somebody that puts on 15 trucks and then runs under their flag and logo. And, you know, so far that model's worked. I guess the $64,000 question is, if it's fair for a fleet operator, why is it unfair for a guy who's got one or two trucks?
Right.
The issue, the important, let me get this very clear. To me, the important thing is that you, if you're owner-operator and the company you work for, need to sit down and talk what is sustainable. Do you want to remain an independent contractor? If you want a job as a truck driver and want to sell your truck, maybe we'll help you do that. But if you want to remain an independent contractor, we value the services you're providing, and we want to help you. I don't think there's going to be any way that people are going to be able to come in and tell an existing workforce, we're sorry you're going to take a cut in revenue and you're going to do all this other thing, because it's not sustainable. And the model is really set up, and when it runs right, the carrier needs to be just as concerned that the owner-operator gets miles, gets home, and gets paid as if he were an employee. So, it's kind of a point of view, but if you believe in the model, large, small carriers and the independent contractors need to be telling somebody, because the press doesn't believe it, the union doesn't believe it, everybody, the academics think that the owner-operator is a victim of circumstances, not somebody who wants a part of the American dream. So it's a philosophical issue here in the States. And the problem with it is, if it gets that every state sets up their own law and they're one election away from changing the model, you don't have any kind of thing that's dependable. Chuck and I were talking about the fact that Governor Christie was a Republican in New Jersey. New Jersey has always recognized the independent contractor model. Now all of a sudden, as California goes, it appears so goes New Jersey. And the New Jersey Trucking Association can stamp its little feet and say all that it wants to. If most of the legislators have this bias against independent contractors, New Jersey's always told us in terms of the taxes and seizing trucks for not being registered, look, you got to realize New Jersey's broke. We need money. So, obviously, they're going to get more revenue to fill their coffers if they have more employee taxes. So I think you're going to see AB5, unless it's stopped in court, spread into other states. And already it's difficult for a large carrier to come up with one contract and one pay system that treats everybody fairly. I tell people, what states are you based in? In the southern states, Georgia, Tennessee, basically the southern states except North Carolina, you've got good case law or a carve out. And, you go into another state and it's a completely different situation.
Yeah, I guess it just depends who your state government is right now.
Yeah, it does. And, it's really not supposed to be that way if you guys get me a list of transportation czar, which isn't going to happen. I would say that one of the beauties of our country is we have this in our Constitution that when it comes to commerce, the federal government can set a uniform law that applies across the states so that you don't have to, particularly in trucking, comply with, 48 or 50 different laws just in order to get across the country. The problem our current administration could come down with a proclamation that under the existing statutes, California law doesn't trump federal law, but, the next election cycle, that could change. We had this whole question in terms of independent contractor status with the last administration, who had a secretary of the Department of Labor who came out with something called the wheel test, which upset, 40 years of precedent. And as soon as the new administration came out, we got a new Department of Labor in terms interpretation. This is no way to run a railroad, much less a trucking company. But that's what's got everyone so upset. The adamancy of the California legislature coming on the heels of this Dynamex case, and the fact that if you want to appeal a decision on the left coast, you have to go through the Ninth Circuit, which most people would say is very biased against the model, means that folks are figuring out this January 1 date in California is like that infamous ELD date of December 16th.
Right.
Some people say, well, gee, just do nothing and wait. But I think the smart money is saying, listen, the chances of this happening are 90-10, and you better be getting prepared.
And I would think relentless, they'll be pretty relentless in enforcement.
California has that reputation. One thing that's
right.
interesting is, and one of the reasons that people are considering incorporating, not as an LLC or as a proprietorship, is when California wants to go in and try to figure out who to prosecute, they look at carriers who pay a lot of owner-operators on 1099s, because a 1099 tax return is the alter ego for a W-2. So,
right.
you know, somebody that's paying 100 people on 1099s, and they get that shared by the with them by the IRS, then they go in and say, aha, this is probably an owner-operator operations, let's take them down. But when you have a carrier-to-carrier situation and the owner-operator is now a full-fledged corporation, you don't have to send them a 1099 or a W-2. Some people think that that elevates everybody's understanding that this former owner-operator is now a bona fide corporation. One other thing that I want to mention in terms of the alternatives is what we've talked about before here is the power-only model. A lot of large carriers are realizing that to get excess capacity because of the problems with this misclassification, that maybe they're better off putting in trailer pools and hiring people like Crescent Carriers to provide power only under their own authority. And in doing that, it makes it a whole lot more easy to defend because, you know, if the rates are right and appeals to RICO, he might very well sign a broker carrier or a forwarder carrier agreement and, leave his trailer in Atlanta or not even buy one and then just provide a power-only service, dropping and hooking for any number of carriers who are moving towards that model. And it would be interesting to get some feedback from folks in terms of if that's a viable model. Some of the things that are attractive about it is now – we have this hellacious problem of having to wait to get loaded. We have this problem with the cargo loss advantage. Under that model, you're dropping and hooking preloaded and sealed trailers. So the owner-operator, new carrier may get a whole lot more productivity and out of doing that than he is currently. Somebody told me that the number of new applicants at the agency was rising dramatically, and they attributed it to this power-only idea. And for the past, 3 years, a lot of carriers in California who have realized that this
bias against owner-operator was coming, have changed their modus operandi over into being more brokerage, more power only, and less if any owner-operator.
That definitely is very interesting. And is there anything that we can come up with solution-wise that can help out maybe stave off some of this attack on the owner-operator model? I understand that at the end of the day, it's all politics, and all politics is local. So we is making sure that we are involved on a local level with our local politicians and local elections. Is that one way to try to help stay ahead of this thing? Any other solutions that might be available that can help us make sure that this doesn't come to a jurisdiction near you?
Unfortunately, I think the decks are stacked against you in a way, and it is that politically, and it's not just with truck drivers, but with the Obamacare and all of that, the trend seems to be that anybody who tries to employ an independent contractor is basically a welfare cheat, and that there's a superseding working man's bill of rights to insurance paid for by your employer, all the rest of it. And frankly, people like Gannett and the newspapers have picked it up. You may remember in California, the longshoremen supporting the Teamsters passed a port bill that basically said older equipment couldn't come into the ports, knowing that owner-operators operated older equipment. So, you know, it would be a massive political undertaking for the 350,000 owner-operators in America to all of a sudden have a voice and change the minds of the statutes. Primarily because part of it requires a carve-out. You know, these new laws are going to apply to a lot of industries that are dissimilar from ours. In our industry, while we've always passed the control test and recognized the owner-operator under the 20-part test, is properly seen, the owner-operator's got skin in the game. He
right.
owns or is
right.
buying a truck. Owns the means of
right.
production more than just somebody hired to do a job. And that means of production is the opportunity he has to become J.B. Hunt. So, you know, that point is not made, and it's lost on the government with the exception of the Small Business Administration. And unfortunately, the big carriers have never embrace the owner-operators as their business partners, maybe with the exception of Landstar. Some of that animus exists between the fact that ATA and OIDA have never gotten along, and it's the commonality to save the model just really hasn't existed. So at this point in time, I don't think there's any magic fairy dust that we can spread around Washington that'll even get them to consider this issue. And that's why I'm not sure that a legislative fix is all that possible at a federal level. I know that, you know, as we sit here, people in New Jersey are trying to mobilize to get to the congressman at the state house. This is the state level, and roll this back to try to come in with something. We tried that about 15 years ago, I guess, in North Carolina, where the North Carolina Workfare Force or whoever it was handing down decisions that virtually made every owner-operator have workman's comp, and The North Carolina Trucking Association tried to get in there and lobby and turn it around, and when all the dust settled, they were worse off than when they started. But in that incident, the North Carolina Trucking Association did not go out and get the owner operators, the people at the ports, the small carriers. I mean, you know, a lot of guys that have 15 to 20 trucks don't have the money to go out and buy those trucks. They need an owner-operator or somebody else to be really their business partner. And that argument was never really made. You know, you see Swift pays $80 million, whatever it is. A lot of guys have been sued on class actions and settled. There is a whole bunch of class action plaintiffs out here suing major motor carriers on misclassification and using a class action to do it. And the amount of money that they are getting in settlements is disheartening. So I'm probably preaching to the choir, but I guess what I'd be interested mostly in is, and I've heard some of the discussions on XM radio, there are very definitely some people who have a different view of the independent contractor model than I have, and that is that it really is unfair to the independent contractor. I've always assumed that if you didn't want to take the opportunity to get a job driving a truck and working by the hour, and nobody forced the man into doing it. I think part of the benefit of this show and what RICO has brought to it over the years is if a guy thinks he wants to be an independent contractor, let's teach him how to do it and how to make money at it.
100%.
Right, and, right. You
know, trucking industry in the United States and Canada is built on the owner-operator model. It just, it works. You know, look at produce. What's going to happen? You know, California, one of their biggest, you know, biggest things they do there is they grow a lot of produce, maybe not as much now because of, you know, fires and floods and everything else, but they still produce an awful lot of produce. And who do you think hauls produce? It's very, you know, there's not a lot of big companies in the USA that hire company drivers that are hauling produce. There's just too many moving parts. Nothing against company drivers, but, you know, if you mess up a load of produce, you've got a huge bill. A load of berries can be $80,000.
Well, what you're talking
right.
about, and I don't want to slam company drivers either. There are a lot of good conscientious guys who basically are committed to doing what it takes to get
100%.
The job done. But the traditional issue came about in the 80s. Prior to the 80s, the vast majority of service was provided in the regulated field by folks that were union companies. And
right.
what they found was in order to haul produce to the docks at or foodstuffs to the docks at Kroger, you had to be a union carrier. And what you ran into was the not my job. So, you know, if you drove a truck as a union man, you came and you sat there until on the clock until somebody came and unloaded. There was no concept of, hey, sure, man, you know, we'll unload this truck. We need to get miles to get home. So the not my job term has been something that really affects productivity. And I think that's one of the reasons that this business-to-business approach and use of independent contractors has proven to be a more efficient way, particularly in truckload, than to have somebody who says, well, gee, I'm paid by the hour. I don't care whether I drive or not.
Right.
Well, we got a listener that wants to get in and ask us a question here. We got a caller calling in from area code 810. Caller, you're up and on board. And for the rest of you guys that are listening in, if you got a question for Hank, contract law, anything like that related, go ahead and press number one. That puts you in the queue. But caller from the 810, you're up live, up and on board with Hank. How can we help you?
Hello, can y'all hear me?
Yep.
Yes, sir, go ahead.
Hello, can y'all hear me?
Hear you loud and clear.
Well, I don't have a question. I just wanted to say, I guess the drivers, me, appreciate what y'all do for us. The information that you all give out is so valuable. I've called Chuck, thank you. Jason, I've called him. He helped me out more than words can say. I'll put it like that. Rico, what you do, the information that you give every week is so valuable to the drivers, owner operators, you name it. You know, we're listening. I can say it like that, we're listening. And just appreciate it. Hank, you too. Appreciate you. We appreciate you.
Well, Carla, we thank
wow.
you for the kind words. We
thank
definitely
you.
Appreciate it. But yeah, we definitely appreciate the kind words there, Carla. If anyone has a question related to anything that we're talking about tonight, if you got a question about contracts or anything like that, you know, I made a video yesterday kind of talking you up a little bit there, Hank. I say, you know, we're going to have one of the leading attorneys in the nation that'll be up and on board with us, and we're running a special. You get to ask him a question, and you don't have to pay a retainer fee. So, you know, it's an excellent opportunity to get up and on board, to get a question asked by someone that actually knows and can give you real deal actionable information. So, you know, don't take the opportunity for granted when we have Hank up and on board with us, because he comes to us with a wealth of knowledge, and is probably, in my humble estimation, one of the best at what he does in the industry. And we're blessed to have him be a part of the podcast. I know that the situation with the owner-operator model is the hotbed topic that's under attack right now, Hank. But is there any more things that are coming down out of Washington, which is, I mean, it's a lot of stuff going on right now in D.C., but as far as with the transportation industry is concerned, is there anything else that may be coming down the pike that we might need to be, I know with the looming ELD mandate and everything taking place, anything else that might be flying under the radar that we might not be aware of or might need to make sure that we got consciousness of?
Well, I don't know. They're not talking to me. Everybody, I think, knows that Martinez, as the administrator, quit. He went to work for Volpe, which is a think tank. They're the people that brought you SMS methodology. So I'm not sure who came up with that post. But Jim Mullins, who is former general counsel of Werner, is now the acting administrator. He really hasn't tipped his hands. A couple of things that are interesting to me is, although for the past 10 years, on behalf of small carriers, we've been saying that SMS methodology is unfair and profiles little guys, and one accident, you lose your insurance. Finally, it looks like ATA is beginning to understand that. They ran like a 20-page insert talking about higher insurance costs and tracking that. If you're watching the insurance information, everybody says that because of nuclear judgments, insurance costs are going to take another real spike. Now, that's not something that the agency can do anything particular about it, but ATRI, which is the American Trucking Association Research Institute, has been charged with the duty of trying to figure out what causes these high insurance costs and nuclear verdicts. So they're actually reaching out to try to measure what everybody knows is the case, that, you know, when somebody gets tacked with a $120 million judgment, insurance rates go up. More importantly, I've been trying to get them to focus on the fact they ask, well, what's a nuclear judgment? And my response back to them was, a nuclear judgment is more than the motor carrier can afford to have in insurance. So, you know, a nuclear judgment for a small carrier can be when a guy gets $1 million for a broken toe and, you know, his insurance company raises the rates. So I expect you'll see some effort on the industry to push back. I hope they'll push back on SMS methodology and try to bring to legislators' attention that we really got to do something about these runaway jury awards. Now, that's not going to be easy, but finally it looks like that's getting some attention. And it's not because large carriers really give a damn if RICO stays in business. It's because they see the repercussions of it, particularly if they go to the power-only model and are hiring small carriers. They're going to get sued. So that there'll be some changes, hopefully, in that for the good. Whether the agency will ever come out with SMS, again, I don't know. Their own Department of Inspector General came out with a report that said what they'd done so far wasn't good enough. And they kind of tabled the IT model. I don't know whether they're just going to run light on putting anything out until after next fall's election. If there is any surprise, it'll be a December surprise because that's the way they work. And, you know, some people have said, well, gee, are they just going to let CSA die on the vine? And the answer to that is they aren't. If we got a minute, I'll tell the audience about an interesting case that I handled this past week. That I handled it that well, but there was a carrier in Wisconsin whose driver was coming back from a southern state and planned on stop at a rest area. He got to the rest area, and there's a big sign that said, no parking. You will be towed. So he knew that the next rest stop was 15 miles further up the road, and he was under load, and he was picked up by the highway patrol and cited for a false log. That was in June.
Wow.
When he that false log report was turned over to the FMCSA, and they posted it, an outfit called CAB, which is a reporting service for the insurance company, turned it over to Progressive, the guy's insurance company, and it just happened that he was coming up for renewal the next couple of months, so they said, well, buddy, we're just going to raise your insurance rates by a third. And that was a $20,000 increase in rates based upon a, quote, false log. Well,
jeez,
we data queued that with the FMCSA and it went back to the state people, and they wouldn't do a damn thing about it. So this guy is riding along, losing business over a bus for a false log for doing something that is exactly what Joe DiLorenzo said he was supposed to do at the Mid-America Truck Show. So, you know, we had Lorenzo's quotes, and
That should have been covered under the
public private
conveyance.
Yeah,
right.
Well, he logged it. Listen to this. He had an ELD, and he logged it as personal conveyance. I mean, he didn't do anything false. You may disagree over what personal conveyance was, but this poor truck driver had driven for 10 years without so much as an accident or a violation. So I'm sitting down there on a stack calendar in a general sessions court
with 75 people in front of him, and I took an expert, and then finally towards the end of the day I got the DA's arm, and I said, now look, you either need to dismiss this and this is why, or here's my expert. And she could see by his vita that he's the one who trained everybody. So they just dismissed it. But, you know, the poor guy from Wisconsin made two trips down there. The company was hoarded up. A guy with an unblemished record was posted as having being engaged in a false log. All of this just defies due process. And, you know, my buddy and I went down there and made a day of it and, you know, did it pro bono. But now we're turning around and trying to say this kind of crap needs to stop. The very idea that they would report
exactly
somebody as guilty of a falsification before he even got his day in court just isn't right.
That's the whole thing about it. This whole thing that's got me upset about it as well is that just like you just said, there's no due process. You are basically tried and executed right there on the spot without any type of due process of going before a court and having your day in court. And that's crazy. I mean, hell, I've done something similar to what you just described.
Well, and you know, I'd laid awake at night trying to get prepared for General Sessions' case, and I'd litigated this thing basically backwards to Sunday, and I was going to ask that trooper, if they put him on the stand, I had a picture of the sign that said no parking, and I was just going to ask him, now what do you think the law required him to do? You know,
yeah,
that the nearest truck stop ain't 5 miles away. It's north, and the way the load was going, he's not supposed to have to drive back to Birmingham. What did you expect him to do under the law, and what law are you relying on? Because they haven't even put the guidance in the form of something we could contest. You know, as far as it is, we came out looking like a champ. The guy's records cleared. The agency had to take it down. Hopefully he will get his insurance company to reconsider. But unless we end up taking some of these on based on the principle of it, the small guy's going to get beat up by the system all the time.
Right. It's like who's your advocate when it comes to this type of situation? This is absurd.
Well, the other thing that's really strange about it is we were sitting in this packed courtroom. There was standing room only, and three other guys came up to me and said, are you a lawyer? Do you represent truck companies? I mean, now this is one of those places where the state scales are a big income producer. The fine
right.
on this was $287. We'd have paid the $287 fine and never said a thing about it, except it messed up the company and the driver's record. Just think what he'd look like if he wanted to go get another job and somebody ran his DAC and said falsification.
Oh yeah, nobody would touch him.
No, career ruined.
Oh my gosh!
The first time he went down there, they called the docket and said, "How do you plead?" And he said, "Not guilty." And the judge looked at him and says, "Well, now you've got perfect right to plead not guilty, and I'll set this over for 3 months. But when you come back, bring your toothbrush, because if I find you guilty, you may stay in the jail down here a night or two."
Good gracious!
It's just crazy.
I'm looking at the time, and we've blown through the hour. It's always a pleasure when we have you on, Hank, and we definitely appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come on and join us. And, for the listeners that are
Let me mention one other thing before you, Rico, before you call off.
if there's anybody on or listening to this that wants to keep up on the independent contractor issue, it's changing by the minute. I think Rico has got my email on his website. We put out a monthly regulatory update. I'd be happy to add anybody that's a Rico listener to it. And, you know, you'll get kind of commentary and an update of what's going on monthly. Probably ought to do it weekly to stay up with as crazy as things are. But, you know, I'd be happy to make that available. We do cover primary issues that affect small carriers.
And not only that, I was going to get definitely make sure that we made mention about that. You can go over to the website, transportationlaw.net. That's where Hank's Seaton and Huss Law Firm, that's their website. Also, if you are needing any type of thing done, contracts drawn up, any type of that stuff, Hank and those guys over there at Seaton and Huss, they do an excellent job. It's not terribly expensive. It's probably the best money you'll ever spend. Get your own, if you need to have your own paperwork or contracts or anything like that drawn up, those guys are excellent. They can help you out with that. So definitely, www.transportationlaw.net. That's where you can find all things Seaton and Huss over there. Any other things you want to mention before we get out of here, Hank, or before you, just to make mention of how
no,
people
I don't
get in contact with you? All right, and once again, we definitely thank Hank for taking time out of his schedule. Chuck, how do the people get in contact with you?
Well, you can call me at 800-388-4352, extension 203. You got to press 203 or you're going to have a hard time getting me. You can also reach me via email, Chuck, C-H-U-C-K, at traffics, traffix.com, or you can catch me on Instagram, private message me at Chuck Snow, CEO. If you want to get set up as a carrier, I do this for all of our listeners. Give me a call. I'll hold your hand. I'll get you set up with the right people. For whatever load you need, and I'll get you set up with free quick pay on everything, get you going. We do that just as a courtesy, especially to our Racing Lanes listeners.
And, of course, we got the Racing Lanes Instagram page going as well. Put up a little video yesterday, had a little unboxing, something that we're going to start to cover and share more information with here on the show as well. Is how to develop your business credit, how to get, you know, making sure. I've been kind of testing a couple of things, and some of the things that I've done finally I've paid off. If you've seen the little unboxing video yesterday, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I'm going to try over the next coming weeks to try and lay out as precisely as I can all the steps that I did that took me to help get me to the process of actually being able to receive platinum American Express corporate card without a personal guarantee. So I want to try to share that information with everybody as well, because being able to use leverage to help run your business is a critical component, and we're going to try to do everything that we can to try to help you guys put all the chips in your corner as we possibly can. So with that being said, we want to thank everybody for taking time out of their busy schedule to listen in. Tell a friend to tell a friend about the show. This has been the Racing Lanes Podcast with Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow and special guest Hank Seaton. With that being said, God bless you. Good night. And we'll talk to you guys same place next week.
Catch you on the flip flop.
Keep it in between.
Thanks, guys.
Right. In the mat. Thank you, Hank.
You're welcome.
Good night. God bless.